The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
And now, Sports Talk 1240.
Good evening and hello again, everybody. Welcome to hour number one of Sports Talk 1240 on WGBB, Freeport, Long Island, New York. Bill Donahue taking you through the first hour on this Sunday night, the 23rd day of August, after which I'll hand it off to Anthony Beers for hour number two. Our engineer Brian Graves is across the way. We've got a great show lined up for you tonight. Up first, we'll welcome in the guitarist from the Allman Brothers Band and Government Mule, among other collaborations. The great Warren Haynes will join us. And in the second half, we'll talk to 1962 original Met. He hit 34 home runs that inaugural season. Frank Thomas will join us. So sit back and relax and enjoy Sports Talk 1240 tonight on WGBB. We've got some great stuff ahead in the next few hours. As always, before we begin, I invite you to follow us on our Facebook page, Sports Talk 1240. There you'll find sports information, show information, and more. So stop by and give us a look, and then you can give us a like. You can also follow us on Twitter, at Sports Talk 1240. And all past shows can be heard on our website at www.sportstalk1240.com. Well, hey, all you daily fantasy sports players out there, Sports Talk 1240 has teamed up with a new daily fantasy sports website called DraftPots.com. What you should do is head over there and register with the promo code SportsTalk1240. What you do then is you receive a $5 credit to get yourself started. So head right over there to DraftPots.com, register with the promo code SportsTalk1240, get yourself that $5 credit and start your daily fantasy sports playing. Get over there right now and do that. What we're going to do is we'll take a quick commercial break, and we're going to head to get Warren Haynes on the telephone. But we'll take a quick break first. We'll be right back, folks.
Are ye plagued by foreclosure? Well, here at Jim, Lad, and Matey, we can stop your foreclosure now. We're a mortgage rescue company, and for the small fee of everything you hold dear, we will negotiate with your lender on your behalf. Call Jim, Lad, and Matey at 1-800-YAR-YAR. That's 1-800-YAR-YAR-R.
If you're facing foreclosure, talk to the right people. Speak with HUD-approved housing counselors free of charge at 888-995-HOPE. Brought to you by NeighborWorks America and the Ad Council.
All right, we're back live on the air. We got to have a call through to Warren Haynes' manager to see why he's not picking up the phone. And as soon as we find out, we'll pass that information along to you. But I'm going to talk a little bit about Pro Football Hall of Fame's class of 2014 that it was enshrined into Canton a few weeks ago. I spoke to David Baker, the president of the Hall of Fame, this week, and we're going to get a couple of the gold jackets onto the show this year as soon as the season starts. Jerome Bettis was enshrined. Jerome Bettis from the Pittsburgh Steelers. He retired after 13 seasons. He ranked fifth all-time in rushing with 13,662 yards. He was a six-time Pro Bowl selection. Jerome rushed for 100 yards 61 times in his career with Los Angeles, St. Louis Rams, and the Pittsburgh Steelers. We also have Tim Brown. Now, Tim starred for 16 seasons with the Los Angeles and Oakland Raiders, and one final season, which he was brought back to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers with his old buddy Chucky Gruden. He registered 1,094 career receptions for 14,934 yards and exactly 100 touchdowns. He also added 4,555 yards and four TDs on punt and kickoff returns. That's Tim Brown from the University of Notre Dame. Also, there was Mr. Charles Haley, a defensive end linebacker, the only player ever to win five Super Bowls. He racked up 100.5 sacks during his 12-year career with the Dallas Cowboys and San Francisco 49ers. Six times he posted double-digit sacks, sack totals in a season. Mr. Charles Haley, that is. Now, elected to the Hall as a contributor was Bill Polian. Bill earned the reputation as a general manager who built dominant teams. Under his leadership, he led the Buffalo Bills and the Indianapolis Colts to a combined 5 Super Bowls. He was the NFL's Executive of the Year, voted by the Sporting News 6 times. That's Bill Polian. And, of course, there was Junior Seau, whose speech was delivered by his daughter. He starred for 20 NFL seasons, during which time he established himself as one of the finest linebackers in NFL history. He was named first-team All-Pro 8 times, selected to 12 Pro Bowls, and named NFL Defensive Player of the Year in 1992. That's Junior Seau. Guard Will Shields. Looking at Will, he never missed a game during 14 seasons, a 224-game career with the Kansas City Chiefs. He was named to the NFL's All-Decade Team of the 2000s, selected first-team All-Pro 3 times, played in 12 straight Pro Bowls. Will Shields, that is. Certainly a great career for Will. A little older, some of the younger kids may not know, Mick Tinglehoff played center for Fran Tarkenton, was signed as a free agent by the Minnesota Vikings. He earned a starting role at center as a rookie, never missed a game for his entire 17-season career. 7-time All-League selection, he was named to 6 straight Pro Bowls. That's Mick Tinglehoff for the Minnesota Vikings. Taking a look at another contributor, Ron Wolf. He spent 23 years with the Raiders, during which time the team posted winning records in all but 6 of those seasons. He later transformed the Green Bay Packers into Super Bowl champions. We also heard this week that up for election in the next class would be the recently deceased Kenny Stabler, the Snake. And it's too bad that it's a little late that he didn't get to see it while he was alive. But long time in coming to see Ken Stabler elected to the Hall of Fame. We'll take a little bit more in-depth look at some of these guys' careers now. Jerome Bettis, for example, another Notre Dame player. Played 1993-1995, Los Angeles, St. Louis Rams, 1996-2005, Pittsburgh Steelers. 13 seasons, 192 games. Selected by the Rams in the first round, the 10th player overall of the 1993 draft. He earned Rookie of the Year honors and finished his rookie season with the 7th best rookie rushing total in league history. As a rookie, he finished 2nd in rushing yards and 3rd in total yards from scrimmage. He was the first Rams rookie to rush for 1,000 yards since Eric Dickerson in 1983. He was the Rams' leading rusher 1993 to 1995, the Steelers' leading rusher from 1996 to 2001, and 2003 to 2004. The Steelers' leader in total yards from scrimmage 1996 to 2001. His 50, 100-yard-plus games ranks first in Steelers' history. Pretty good for the Pittsburgh Steelers. At the time of retirement, his 8 1,000-plus-yard seasons was tied for 3rd best in NFL history, and his 13,662 ranked 5th all-time in career rushing yards. Jerome ranked 19 all-time in combined net yards at the time of retirement. He was voted to the Pro Bowl 6 times, named All-Pro in 1993, 1996 All-Pro second team in 1997, and, of course, Hall of Fame this year. Tim Brown, also a Heisman Trophy winner. Los Angeles Raiders and Tampa Bay Buccaneers, where he finished up his career. Selected by the Raiders in the first round of the 1988 draft. As a rookie, he led the NFL in kickoff returns, return yards, and yards per return average. He led the NFL in receptions in 1997. He set Raiders franchise records and led the NFL in kickoff returns, return yards, and yards per return. At the time of retirement, his 14,934 receiving yards were the second highest total in NFL history. 1,094 receptions were third, and 100 touchdown catches were tied for third. He also gained 190 rushing yards, 3,320 punt return yards, and 3 fumble return yards, 1,235 kickoff return yards. He was voted to the Pro Bowl 9 times, and he was an All-Pro choice as a kick returner in 1988. All-Pro wide receiver in 97. Was named All-AFC as a kick returner in 1988, a punt returner in 91, and a wide receiver numerous times. That's Tim Brown. Also, as I said, one of the few Heisman Trophy winners as well from the University of Notre Dame. Charles Haley, storied career defensive end linebacker from James Madison. He was selected by the 49ers in the fourth round. The only player in NFL history to play on 5 winning Super Bowl teams. He began his career at linebacker and led the 49ers in sacks in each of his first six seasons. He recorded 4 double-digit sack totals with the 49ers, including 12 as a rookie and a career-high 16 in 1990. He suffered serious back injury and limited to just 5 games in 1996. He retired after undergoing that surgery. After a 2-year hiatus, he did sign with the 49ers as a backup defensive end for 2 playoff games in 98. In 99, he came back for a final season and added 3 sacks to finish his career with 100.5. He was twice named the NFC Defensive Player of the Year. He was voted to 5 Pro Bowls and named All-Pro twice, once as a linebacker and one as a defensive end. He played in 6 NFC Championship games over 7 seasons. He was a member of 10 division championship teams during his 12 seasons. Charles Haley, most known as a Dallas Cowboy from James Madison University. As a contributor, Bill Polian from NYU, folks, from New York University, spent 32 seasons in the NFL, during which time he earned the reputation of building franchises into dominant playoff teams. Most noted for turning fortunes of 3 different teams, resulted in combined 5 Super Bowls, the Buffalo Bills 3, the Indianapolis Colts 2. He began as a scout for the Kansas City Chiefs, and he took over as general manager of the Bills in 1984. He built teams into powerhouses, leading 4 straight AFC division titles, including back-to-back 13-3 records in 1990 and 1991. The Bills earned 3 straight Super Bowl berths after winning AFC championships in 1990 to 1992. He led Carolina to an NFC championship in just their second season. The 1996 Panthers knocked off the Cowboys in the NFC divisional playoff game before falling to the Packers in the NFC championship. He led teams to 8 championship games, the Bills 4, the Panthers 1, the Colts 3. He was the first administrator to be named NFL's Executive of the Year by the Sporting News 6 times. Born in the Bronx, New York, folks, Bill Polian from New York University, Hall of Fame class of 2015. If you're just joining us and you're expecting to hear Warren Haynes, folks, I'm sorry. He did not pick up the phone. We have a call into his manager to find out what happened. We're sorry to disappoint you tonight, but we hope to bring him to you another night. But it's totally beyond our control. So we're talking about the Hall of Fame class of 2015. Up next, the great Junior Seau, linebacker from the University of Southern California, selected by San Diego in the first round, the fifth player overall in the 1990 NFL draft. He started 15 of 16 games. He played as a rookie, finished as the team's second leading tackler. First team All-Pro selection 8 times, selected to play in 12 Pro Bowls, recorded 56.5 sacks during his career. He intercepted 18 passes for 238 yards. He really exemplified perseverance, leadership, and a level of excellence that earned him national recognition as one of the premier linebackers in the NFL. He recorded 10 or more tackles in a game 64 times and helped the Chargers to their only Super Bowl appearance. Recorded 10 or more tackles in a game 10 times that year and recorded 155 tackles, 5.5 sacks, 3 fumble recoveries, forced a fumble, and had 3 passes defensed. He was the Chargers' leading tackler 8 times and led the team in sacks twice. Played in Super Bowl with the New England Patriots. Was Chargers MVP 6 times, Defensive Player of the Year in 1992. Named to NFL's All-Decade Team of the 90s. He passed away May 2, 2012 at the very young age of 43 from the University of Southern California, Junior Seau, Hall of Fame Class of 2015. From the Kansas City Chiefs, folks, Will Shields from the University of Nebraska Cornhuskers, 14 seasons with the Kansas City Chiefs, 224 games, selected by the Chiefs in the third round, 74th player overall in the 1993 draft. Placed into the lineup in his first NFL game after starting in left guard, after the starting left guard suffered injury. Next week was inserted as the starting right guard and started every game from that point through retirement. Never missed a game during his 14-season career. 224 games played, 223 starts. That's a franchise record for the Kansas City Chiefs. As a rookie, he helped the Chiefs to an 11-5-0 mark and an AFC Western Division crown, the first division title for the team since 1971. The Chiefs won 4 division titles and made 6 playoff appearances during Mr. Shields' career. He earned 12 straight Pro Bowl berths. He was named First Team All-Pro in 1999, 2002, and 2003. And picked his second team All-Pro 4 times. He led the NFL in points scored in 2002 and 2003, highlighted by running back Priest Holmes, then record 23 rushing touchdowns in 2003. In 1994, Chiefs defensive line established franchise record by allowing a mere 19 sacks. He was a member of the NFL's All-Decade Team of the 2000s, joined Hall of Fame linebacker Derek Thomas in 1999 as the only active players named to the Chiefs' 40th anniversary team. He was born in Fort Riley, Kansas. Ladies and gentlemen, Will Shields of the Kansas City Chiefs, University of Nebraska Cornhusker. Moving back a little further, playing with Fran Tarkenton, his center was the great another player from Nebraska, the great Mick Tinglehoff, coming in at 6'2 and 237. 17 seasons, 240 games, originally signed by Minnesota as a free agent out of the University of Nebraska and earning a starting nod at center rookie year, never relinquished that role for the remainder of his stellar 17-year career. Known for his durability, toughness, and perseverance, he never missed a game or practice and started all 240 regular season games of a career that ended after the 1978 season. He also played in 19 playoff games during his career and anchored an offensive line that helped the Vikings claim 10 defensive titles, 10 divisional titles in an 11-season span from 1968 to 1978. Minnesota also won 4 out of 5 NFL-NFC division championships, but they played in advance to the Super Bowl 4 times. He excelled in an era and a division in which middle linebackers like Hall of Famers Joe Schmidt, Ray Nitschke, and Dick Butkus dominated, and a center often had to get out and block them in space. Tinglehoff also played in an all-pro level when defensive tackles like Merlin Olsen and Bob Lilly were wreaking havoc. He was elected to the Pro Bowl 6 times, was an NFL all-pro choice 7 times. Mick Tinglehoff from the University of Nebraska Hall of Fame class of 2015. Finally, a contributor, Ron Wolf from the University of Oklahoma, began his career as a scout for the Raiders in 1963, recognized as one of the finest personnel men in pro football, made lasting remark as a longtime player personnel director for the Raiders, and later as the executive vice president and general manager of the Green Bay Packers. Wolf spent 23 seasons helping build a Raiders franchise that posted winning seasons in all but 6 years during that span. The Raiders claimed 9 division titles, played in 8 AFC, AFL championship games, and 3 Super Bowls. In 1966, when the Raiders owner Al Davis was named commissioner of the American Football League, Wolf joined the AFL as coordinator of talent. At age 37, he was named general manager of the expansion Tampa Bay Buccaneers and built the foundation that earned the team a trip to the NFC Championship by their 4th season. He rejoined the Raiders in 1979, heading up personnel operations until 1990 when he briefly joined the New York Jets. During 11 seasons as executive vice president and general manager, he turned the Packers into a dominant NFL franchise, claiming 3 straight NFC Central Division titles and back-to-back Super Bowl appearances. The 1996 Packers posted first 16-win season in franchise history that included the thrilling 35-21 win over the New England Patriots in their Super Bowl appearance. Ron Wolf, a contributor, Hall of Fame class 2015 from the University of Oklahoma. That's it for the Hall of Fame class of 2015, folks. I hope you enjoyed running through those immortals. And once again, if you were expecting to hear from Warren Haynes from the Allman Brothers Band and Government Mule, I'm sorry we couldn't bring him to you tonight. He did not pick up his phone. We have a call into his manager to find out just why Warren was lax in that respect. But you know how rock stars are, folks. Thank God I'm not one. Not yet, anyway. But, yeah, we'll go to a break in a minute. But we'll try to bring him to you another night, folks. We'll get to his PR people tomorrow and find out what the deal was. But we'll certainly get that straightened out for you. We'll go to a break. Next up, we'll talk to 1962 original New York Met Frank Thomas. He'll join us after the break on Sports Talk 1240. So you don't move, folks, and you stay right there with us, okay? Thank you.
Sports Radio New York and AM 1240 WGBB are proud to announce the new Sports Talk 1240, along with the launch of a brand new website at sportstalk1240.com. Check out our new site for information about upcoming shows, as well as easy access to past shows, articles, our live studio webcam, and more. Of course, be sure to tune in to Sports Talk 1240 every Sunday night from 8 to 10 p.m. on AM 1240 WGBB, or visit sportstalk1240.com for ways to listen to the live broadcast online or from your iPhone. We're excited about these new changes and hope you will be too.
So you're looking for a great club but don't want to go into Manhattan. Or you'd like to find a new restaurant to check out. Or you're buying a house here on Long Island and you'd like to find out about a certain area. Wouldn't it be nice if you could find out all the information in just one spot? Well, you can. LongIslandExchange.com. It's all you need to find out all about Long Island. LongIslandExchange.com for hotspots, classifieds, news, and more. LongIslandExchange.com is designed with only the Long Islander in mind. Get the best of Long Island. LongIslandExchange.com. Discover Long Island all over again at LongIslandExchange.com.
If you're trying to quit smoking, dipping, or chewing tobacco, you don't have to do it alone. Nicotine Anonymous is a 12-step program of recovery that meets regularly in your area. There are no dues or fees. The only requirement for membership is a desire to be free of nicotine. For information and meetings near you, call 877-TRY-NIC-A. That's 877-TRY-NICA. Or visit nicotine-anonymous.org. Let us share our experience, strength, and hope with you.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240. Check us out every Sunday night at 8 p.m. right here on AM 1240 WGBB. And visit us online at sportstalk1240.com.
Making simple changes in your everyday travel choices makes a big difference to New York's air quality. Trip chain, use mass transit, rideshare, bike, or walk. Visit cleanairny.org to learn more. Clean Air New York, breathe it in. A public service message brought to you by the New York State Department of Transportation.
And now, back to Sports Talk 1240.
All right, we're back with Sports Talk 1240 on WGBB, Freeport, New York. Bill Donahue with you tonight. I hope you had a great weekend. Some nice summer weather. Mets had a nice weekend in Colorado. We did hear from Warren Haynes' publicity woman. She couldn't get a hold of him either, so... Hope he's having a good time, Warren, wherever he is, and I hope you're enjoying Sports Talk 1240 tonight, regardless. Well, my next guest played for the Pittsburgh Pirates, the Cincinnati Reds, the Chicago Cubs, the Milwaukee Braves, the New York Mets, the Phillies, and the Houston Astros, but of course he will be remembered around these parts for being an original New York Met. He hit 34 home runs and drove in 94 runs that inaugural season. I welcome to Sports Talk 1240 tonight, Frank Thomas. Frank, good evening.
Good evening, Bill. How are you?
Great. It's great to have you, Frank. Now, I have to tell the folks that we ran into you this summer, a few weekends ago. My wife and I met Frank up in Cooperstown, New York, and we had a nice chat with Frank. Right?
That's absolutely.
And what I want to bring up with you first, Frank, is your time with the Pirates now. You were a three-time All-Star with the Pittsburgh Pirates. Now, let's talk about some of the Hall of Famers that you might have had brushes with there. First, tell me a little bit about Branch Rickey.
I don't want to talk about him. I didn't care for him, Bill.
Okay.
He treated me like I was dirt underneath his feet.
As he did many other players, I bet. Yeah.
I have no respect for him then, and I have no respect for him now.
Like Ralph Kiner used to say, he traded him away, and he could have finished last without Ralph, he told him.
That's exactly what he said.
Yeah.
The type of man he was.
Okay. Now tell me a little bit about playing with Ralph.
Well, I only played with Ralph. The first game I played with him, I came up as a center fielder.
Okay.
Okay. And the ball was hitting left center, and he says, "Go get it, kid." So,
yeah.
So I was the younger one, so he figured I had better legs. So, but Ralph and I became pretty good friends. And then when he became a broadcaster for the Mets, he was always very nice to me. And you know, I saw him a year before he passed away in New York. You know, he was in a wheelchair when we saw him. And he was just a great guy, and I had a lot of respect for him.
Yeah, good man, a good man, Frank. You're exactly right. Now you played with Clemente for a while.
Yes, 1955, 56, 57, and 58.
I mean,
he was a great ball player. You could see the potential when he came up in 55. And, you know, he had two things against him. Number one, he had the language against him. You know, because he didn't know how to speak English very much. But, you know, he developed into a pretty good speaker as far as English language is concerned, and he became a pretty good ball player. You could see that from the first.
Sure. Okay. Now, how about Maz? You were good friends with Maz Araski.
Yeah, Maz is godfather to one of my kids, and he came up in 1956. And I remember I was probably one of the first ones to talk to him, standing outside the hotel in Cincinnati. And he was the greatest second baseman I ever played with. You know, you don't realize the type of player he is until when I come in to play third base and I throw the ball to second base and for a double play. And then when I got to play first base, I didn't think that the ball ever hit his glove at second base for the pivot.
Mm-hmm. That good,
that's
yeah.
He was. And I never saw anybody take him out on a double play, except I got a picture probably last year, and I saw where somebody knocked him down. That was the only time that I have ever seen a picture of somebody knocking him down. His legs were very big, and they just pounced off of him.
Great fielder, definitely.
Right, definitely.
Now, how did you feel about being traded away from Pittsburgh, Frank?
Well, you know, Joe Brown was the general manager then, and I played for him in New Orleans, and he always said that he would trade his mother if he got a good deal. And I always said to him, I said, well, Joe, I'd appreciate if you'd do one thing. If you ever have intention of trading me, please let me know first so I know how to handle the media, okay? Now, I happen to be in Germany with Joe Graziola, Nestor Shylock, and Early Wynn, putting on a clinic for the Air Force in 1959. It was after the 58 season. And I was early in the morning, 7 o'clock in the morning, the phone rang. Says, Frank Thomas? I says, yes. He said, how do you feel about being traded? I said, who was I traded to? And he said, since then. I said, for whom? And he says, Hope, Paddocks, and Burgess. And I'm really burning because Joe never did call me, and I felt that he owed me that respect. All right? So Greg Graziola, who was my roommate, says, don't burn your bridges behind you. Put your hand over the phone, which was good advice, and I took that advice. But I still was mad as hell, pardon the expression.
Sure.
Because he didn't let me know. But I was traded with a bad hand, though, Bill, and no one would believe me. Okay? Gabe Paul called me in Germany. And he said, I told him, I said, you're getting damaged goods. I said, I had an operation on my thumb, and it wasn't successful. It's still sore. And the doctor who operated on me, you're going to laugh, but he was a gynecologist. Are you laughing?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
All right. So that's exactly what happened. And then when I saw Gabe Paul in Cincinnati after I got home from Germany, and I talked to him, and I said, you know, you're getting damaged goods. He said, no, you're kind of perturbed because of the big trade. I said, no. Baseball played in Cincinnati is the same as played in Pittsburgh. The bases are the same. But the field's a little shorter, so it would be to my advantage in that respect.
Right.
But, and he said, you know what you had asked for? And I said, well, if you think I'm being unfair, he says, no. He says, you had a great year. He says, but you're going to have the same type of year in order to get what we're going to give you. And I said to him right then and there, I said, I don't think I'll be able to do it.
Okay.
And I didn't do it because you don't go from 35 home runs to 12 unless there's something radically wrong with you.
Right.
And that's exactly what it was. I had tumors growing around my nerves.
Oh.
And that's the reason why. And Freddie Hutchinson always said to me, he said, you're my type of player because you have never complained. I know you're hurting. But you never complained when I put your name in a lineup, and you always did the best that you could.
Gotcha. Okay. Now, how about Gabe Paul? Was he a little better with you?
Gabe Paul?
Yeah.
Was he what?
Was he a little straighter with you than Branch Rickey?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Well, but to be honest with you, Bill, there's only one general manager that I had any respect for. And that was John Hall of the Cubs.
Okay.
You talk to him, okay, and he'd listen to you, and he'd give you his side, and then you'd dicker back and forth. But he was honest with me, and I respected him for that.
Gotcha. Yeah, for those folks who don't remember, the trade was Whammy Davis, Jim Pendleton, and Jim Powers went to Cincinnati along with Frank Thomas for Smokey Burgess, Harvey Haddix, and Don Hoke. That was the deal.
Bill, they're all gone.
Yeah.
Every one of them. I'm the only one still alive. The good Lord don't want me, I guess.
No, I don't think that's it. Now, you got the chance in Cincinnati to play with Frank Robinson, Veda Pinson, some guys like that.
Great players, I'll tell you. Great players.
Yeah. Good ball players. Now, right. then shortly after, you were traded by the Reds to the Cubs.
Right. I was traded for Bill Henry.
Bill Henry, yeah, right. You got to play with some great ball players in Chicago as well.
Played with Ernie Banks, played with Billy Williams, played with Ron Santo, but when I was with the Cubs,
Richie Ashburn.
Richie was there also, right?
Right.
And then when I was with the Cubs, I'm second to Banks in home runs, and they bring up Santo and they bring up Murphy, who they paid $125,000 for. And it was a time when they had the roving nine managers. Okay, so if one manager liked you, you played. If another one doesn't like you, you didn't get to play. And at that particular time, I was in Pittsburgh with the Cubs playing the Pirates. And I'm not in the lineup. And after the meeting is over, I said to Boudreau, I says, what does this mean? He says, it means that you're going to play just against left-hand pitching. I said, well, who's doing this? He says, it's the front office. And I said, well, would you be mad if I called the front office and asked them what the reason for this was? And then he changed his tune. He said, this is my risk. I lost respect for him. I hate when somebody lies to me.
Yeah. Oh, no good, Frank. Yeah, I know exactly what you're feeling. Yeah.
But I got traded for Mel Roche. Okay, I had two home runs, I think, at that particular time, May 7th. And when I got traded, and I changed clubhouse when we went to Milwaukee from Chicago, got off the bus, and they told me you're changing clubhouses. That day, I beat the Cubs by hitting a double off Glenn Hovey in the eighth inning to win the ball game.
Exactly.
Okay, that happened to me also when I went from the Mets to the Phillies. I got on the bus, and we get into Philadelphia. And Casey's standing at the bottom of the bus, and he said, you're changing clubhouses. We changed clubhouses, and Al Jackson was pitching. And I beat them. I drove in the only two runs, beat them 2-1.
Oh, I didn't know that happened then, too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. We're talking to Frank Thomas tonight on Sports Talk 1240. Now, there was a great accomplishment in your career, and we spoke about this up in Cooperstown, Frank. On June 8th, 1961, the four home runs. Explain to the folks what I'm talking about.
Well, from the time baseball was invented, Bill, until June 8, 1961, this feat has never been done in Major League Baseball.
Right.
When I was with the Milwaukee Braves, we hit four home runs in succession in one inning by four different players. So that's back-to-back-to-back-to-back home runs. Eddie Matthews hit the first one off Jim Maloney. Hank Aaron hit the second one off Jim Maloney. They brought in Marshall Bridges, who pitched to Joe Hadcock. He hit the third one. And I made history by hitting the fourth home run in succession. And to be honest with you, the Hall of Fame did not ask for my bat. And when I was in Hall of Fame in July, where I met you, I went to the Hall of Fame and I said to them, I've been coming here now. I came here with the Cubs. I came here with the Mets. I came here with the Pirates. And I came over with my family. Mm-hmm. And I've been up for the last 2 years. And I have never seen my picture in any of the walls in the Hall of Fame. And I said to the guy, I said, the only players you put up there are the players who are from the big market cities.
Right.
And I said, you do not have the history making of when we hit the four home runs. And the librarian wrote me a letter, and he says, we researched this, and we don't have it. And do you have any recollection of it to where you can send us anything? I haven't gotten back to them yet, but they should go to Elias, who has the record of that game,
right?
And they can get that information from them.
Definitely, yeah. That great thought, Frank. Yeah. Four home runs in a row. It's been done since then, but the...
It's been done seven times. The Red Sox have done it. Cleveland's done it. Minnesota's done it. The Dodgers have done it twice. And the last team to do it has been the Diamondbacks in 2009.
You're right. The Diamondbacks have been the last one to do it. But the first team to do it was the Milwaukee Braves, Eddie Matthews, Hank Aaron, Joe Adcock, and the last guy to do it, Frank Thomas. The last player, the last home run, Frank Thomas.
Well, they can tie me, but the only time they can beat me is if they hit five.
Exactly. Right. Well, what a feat that was. And Frank told me about that up in Cooperstown. That was a great feat. Now, you also played with Torrey. Now, did you have any idea that Torrey would be a great manager, or you didn't see anything in him then?
Well, I thought Joe was a great hitter. You know, he got his first hit with my bat. And he mentioned that at the Hall of Fame.
He did?
Yeah. He mentioned that. I thought that was very nice of him to do that. And when he came up, he didn't have a bat. And I said, here, take mine, Joe. You'll probably like it. You got a base hit with it. So.
Nice.
But he was a great guy. I tell you, I enjoyed playing with him and playing against him also when he was with the Cardinals. And always talked to him, and he was very, very nice to me.
Nice. Well, after the Braves, Frank was traded to the New York Mets for a player to be named later. That turned out to be Gus Bell and Cash. Right. And Frank...
Well, let me tell you that story.
Go ahead. Yeah, go right ahead, Frank.
Give you an example of why I say that if people would know what general managers did to players, they'd be on the player's side all the time. Good example is my case. In June, when I'm with the Braves, John McHale said, I want to sign you for next year. I looked at him and I laughed. I said, you got to be kidding me. I said, it's only June. I may be sorry. You may go good and I'll be sorry. Or I may go bad and you'll be sorry. I said, but I'll sign before I go home. So he called me up in September and he said, we want to sign you for next year. And I said, before we do anything, I want to ask you one question. What are your intentions for me come 1962? So you're going to be our left fielder. I said, I'll tell you what I'll do, John. You bring out whatever contract you want me to sign, and I will sign it. And the only reason why I am doing this is because you are giving me a chance to play regular again. That was in September. And I said to him, do not let me sign if you have intentions of trading me. And like I said, it was in September. November, I'm up on him. My wife called me at the time and said, you just got sold to the Mets.
Yeah.
They lied to you. They lied to you so much.
Unbelievable.
I'm the type of person, I tell the truth. I don't like people to lie, okay? I tell people what I think right to their face. I don't say it behind their back or anything like that. You know, this is a story. It happened. It's a true story, and that's the reason why I tell it.
Amazing. No pun intended.
Oh.
Now, when Frank joined the Mets, 34 home runs, 94 RBIs, that home run mark would stand until a guy named Kingman broke it in 1975. Now, you played for Casey Stengel, Frank. Now, tell us a little bit about what you thought of Casey Stengel.
Well, I'd say this about the man. He was a great man, and he probably forgot more baseball than I'll ever know. I don't know any of the antics that he pulled on the bench because I was always out in the field, okay? And he would speak to me like you and I are speaking now, but to the media he would give you that Stengelese.
Okay, yeah.
And he was a type of man that if he wanted to get the best of the ball player to bring out the best of that player, he would make sure that he would be in the clubhouse close enough to the locker of the player he was going to talk about to the media. And a good example of that was Jim Hickman, okay, who played center field for the Mets, who was my roommate, and he was a good ball player. And Casey would try to bring out more for him to become a better player than he was. He had a great arm. He can go get the ball, and he had a good bat. But he took it the wrong way, and I kept telling him as my roommate, He's using a little reverse psychology on you, Jim. Okay, take it for what it's worth and just go out and do whatever you can and do the best that you can. Now, after he left the Mets, he went to the Cubs, ended up hitting over 30 home runs.
Right.
So Casey was right. He knew. He knew what type of player he was, and he wanted to bring out the best of him at that particular time.
And he turned out to be right, Casey.
Yeah, right.
Right. Now, tell us a little bit, Frank. We're talking to Frank Thomas tonight. The atmosphere at the old Polo Grounds. Now, you had the colorful characters around the ball club. These guys, Thronberry, Coleman, Keneal. These are not older guys. Marv Thronberry was 28 years old. Tell us about the atmosphere at the old Polo Grounds.
Well, you know, we had a good ball club, Bill. You know, we scored a lot of runs.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go back to the record, you will see that we lost 51 games in the 7th, 8th, and 9th innings. Now, we would have had, like the pitchers that they have today, the throwers that they have today, pardon me, not pitchers, they're throwers today, okay? Give me 6 good strong innings, and then they all have their arms operated on with Tommy John surgery.
Right.
Because they're throwing so hard and stuff like that. But we didn't have the long man. We didn't have the short man. We didn't have the closer. Okay? But like I said, we had good ball players, Ashburn. We had Felix Mantilla. We had Zimmer. We had Charlie Neal. Okay? And we had Joe Pignatano, and, you know, a good ball players. And we had Jim Hickman, and we had Roger Craig, and we had Al Jackson. But it was just one of those unfortunate things. If there was any way to lose a ball game, we lost it.
Mm-hmm. So what about the fans and the...
The fans are great because, you know, New York is strictly a national town.
Right, okay.
And, you know, and then when Brooklyn left, you know, and the Giants left also, you know, they only had one team to root for, the Yankees. And New Yorkers, a lot of New Yorkers don't like the Yankees.
Exactly. I know how you feel.
I just said I didn't like the Yankees.
No, I know. I was... I'm putting words in your mouth. Yeah,
they were always a good ball player. And the reason why people hated the Yankees because they're always winning. But you know they had their own television scenes. They can go out and buy the ball players that they want, and they've gone the wrong way now. They try to buy free agent players to win the pennant, and before that they went through their farm system, and that's what most of the clubs are trying to do right now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the Cubs are doing that. The Pirates have done that.
Yeah.
Houston has done that. Kansas City has done that.
I agree.
So you can see the difference when they come through their own farm system.
I agree, Frank. We're speaking with Frank Thomas tonight. Now, you went from the Mets to the Phillies, as you said. You played with Bunning. And I want to ask you about Dick Allen, because a lot of people say that Dick Allen was misunderstood and that he was a great teammate. Give me your impression of Dick Allen.
Well, you know, to me, he could have been the greatest hitter to play this game. There wasn't a ballpark in the league that could hold him with his power. I've seen him hit balls that were unbelievable, okay, while I was there. And it was just an unfortunate thing that Gene Mock, you know, had rules for him and had rules for the other 24 players.
Okay,
and that didn't help things.
Yeah, so he basically didn't get along with Mock.
Well, he got along with Mock. He got along. Mock liked him, and I remember when you know I played first base, and I remember George Myatt, who was the third base coach. Richie would say to him, "George, tell Gene to put Frank on first base because I like to throw the ball to him because he saves me a lot of errors." That he catches balls with his bare hand and everything and saves me, you know, from errors. And you know, we had the misfortune between him and I, and just one of those things that happen when you have a group of 25 players.
Yeah, understood. Now, from there, you went to Houston, and you run into a couple of more good ball players. Jimmy Winn, Rusty Staub, and Nellie Fox, another Hall of Famer.
Also Joe Morgan.
Oh, the Joe Morgan was there as well. Exactly.
That was his rookie year.
Yeah.
Right. So, and then Robin Roberts was there also.
Ah, at the end of his career, he was in Houston.
Right.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, my last hit with the Phillies was a home run. My last hit with the Houston Astros was a home run. And I always got triggered after hitting home run. I said, I better stop hitting home runs.
Yeah, you might last longer, right?
Right, right.
Now, how about your last stop with the Cubbies? I want to ask you about this guy's in the Hall of Fame as well, but a lot of people are contentious about it. How about Leo the Lip?
Leo always did like me.
And, he did?
Yeah, he did. In fact, he picked me for the 1955 All-Star team. And I said to him, I said, thank you. He says, you are a great ball player. He said, you deserve to be an All-Star. And he was very nice. But, you know, I don't know whether you realize it or not, but I played with 13 Hall of Famers.
Oh, I believe it. I thought there would have been more.
No, 13.
13, okay.
We counted when I was up in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I believe it. A lot of great ball players. And then you're not even looking at...
Well, you know, Bill, my era in baseball is going to, the 50s and 60s, is going to get down in history as the greatest era in baseball.
Yeah.
There's only 8 teams in each league, okay, and you were the best. And if you didn't hit 250 in the major leagues back then, you were not in the major leagues. They're
right.
Hitting 190 now and making $2 million.
And you're even talking, you're not even talking about ball players like we talked about Dick Allen, and then you have guys like Rico Cardi you played with, Frank?
Right, right, right. A lot of good ball players out there, okay? You know, today there's 32 teams, okay, and a lot of players, Allen is thinned out, and there's a lot of them that could not have played in one era. Some of the pitchers could have played in one era. They're pitching, they're throwing today because they throw the ball pretty good and they have pretty good stuff. But a lot of the regulars that are playing today would have not made the major leagues.
No, the talent is very, very, very washed
right.
out, very, very thinned out right. today.
Well, I relished the 1958 All-Star game because the players picked the team. The ballot box wasn't stuffed like they were in a lot of times, you know, because a lot of times it becomes a popularity contest and the people who vote, they want to see the stars play. But the 58 team was picked by the players, and that's why I relished that more than any other All-Star game.
Yeah, I agree, Frank. I think the balloting should go back to the players. Now,
right.
what are you doing these days, Frank? Just relaxing?
That's you guys play a lot of charity golf tournaments.
Yeah.
And I do charity work at 3 days a week. I go to a grocery store, and they bring the carts of cakes and buns and cookies and meat and all that, and I pack them in the banana boxes, and then the truck comes, and we load the truck, and it goes to the food banks.
Excellent. So you're keeping yourself busy?
Yeah, I keep myself pretty busy.
Good. Well, I tell you, Frank, it was a real honor meeting you up in Cooperstown, and it's been a pleasure having you with us tonight and getting to know you a little better.
Well, I appreciate it very much, Bill. Anytime.
Great. We'll keep in touch.
Okay, buddy.
Thanks for taking the time to be with us tonight.
You're quite welcome. God
you
bless.
Take care. Frank Thomas,
bye-bye.
Folks. Well, that'll do it for me tonight on Sports Talk 1240. I'd like to thank my guest, Frank Thomas. We will get in touch with Warren Haynes' people, and we'll announce to you folks when we're going to have them again for you. Thanks for joining us. Stay tuned for hour number two with Anthony Beers up next on Sports Talk 1240. I'll be back with you next Sunday, August 30th, with former Yankee Fritz Peterson and former Met Doug Flynn. Till then, Bill Donahue, wishing you a good evening, folks.
program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.